This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast. Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, and a very warm welcome to a very special Tech Talk when we will be looking back at 2023 and the year ahead, 2024. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's our opportunity each week to come together to explore the world of technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. You can get in contact with us in the usual way. It's an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. 2023 was the year of the large language models, which are increasingly being used for general, business and personal chatbots. Also, AI is describing images and documents, and we even spoke with the CEO of Be My Eyes right here on Tech Talk. AI is enabling human-sounding voices, generating music, and was even used to lift the voice of John Lennon from a slightly ropey demo, which led to the release of a new Beatles song. There are no end, it seems, to the ability of AI, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about that very much in the next little while. Of course, it wasn't just all about AI. We heard a bit about augmented reality as well in 2023. Apple announced their Vision Pro device. And of course, some of the assistive technologies increasingly are trying to integrate augmented reality and AI in their products as well. There were new apps for obstacle detection and people finding. Jaws got facilities for splitting your braille line and much, much more. We heard about guide robots, delivery robots, all here on Tech Talk, and we encourage you to go back through the year and check out some of those highlights. Well, here to unpick some of that, share with us their highlights from 2023 and look ahead to 2024, we have an intrepid cast of characters. Let's welcome in from RNIB's Technology for Life team, Jackie Brown. Hello, Jackie.
Hi there, everybody.
Robin Spinks, of course, is RNIB's Technology Inclusive Design Lead. Robin Spinks, welcome.
Great to be here.
And Callum Stoneman, of course, is our regular co-host here on Tech Talk. Callum.
Hello, good to be here.
And author and futurist, who you've heard on the programme before, we are delighted to be joined by Ant Morse, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, Ant.
Wonderful to be back. Thank you. Great to be back.
Thank you so much for joining us. So we've got four of you. I don't want the whole thing to be about AI, but just let's go round the room. Just give me a moment, a story, a highlight, if you would, from 2023. I'm going to start with you, Ant.
Yeah, well, I think I am going to stick to AI for a moment, Dave. I think that's the one that has really changed the game. I launched my book in late December the year before, so it was a very kind of an interesting time to see, you know, where is this technology going to take us? And as a futurist, I look at the technology, but also and more critically at the societal impacts of this. So for me, it was about how will people use it? What will they do? And the story I have to and regularly share is let's watch what children do with technology. That gives us a guide as to, you know, the early adopters, the natural digital natives, if you like. And my son came home one evening with some homework, and it was quite a meaty task, and we predicted it taking, you know, 4 or 5 1-hour sessions to get this homework done. And he was 12 years old at the time, and only to find that he'd done it in about 30 minutes. And we were a bit intrigued as to how he'd done this, and he was a bit coy, and it turned out he'd put the whole thing into ChatGPT and then spent the 30 minutes to change the language to that of a 12-year-old. So I thought that was just brilliant. So if that's a sign of things to come, we're in for an exciting future with large language models. But yeah, I thought hats off to him for inspiration. But how do we, which brings another problem, and is how do we police that in education and in business as well?
Yeah, well, and I wonder, did you tell him that he could have just added the clause in the voice of a 12-year-old to the end of his request?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's learning how to use it. But hats off to him for his own initiative at the time, which I think, again, is that, you know, how will people use it to work smarter, not harder, is really interesting.
Jackie Brown, what was your technology moment of 2023?
Well, still on the theme of children with AI, that I think has really become a game changer for blind and partially sighted people is the bot tab in Be My Eyes, the Be My AI tab. And I was absolutely knocked for six when I started playing with this when it arrived in 2023. And one of the things that I love about it that I use it for quite often is when I get a photograph of my two grandchildren from their mummy or daddy, and I can then get a description of what they're wearing, perhaps, or the setting. It's absolutely incredible, and I've just been blown away by that. And I think in so many other respects, the AI for blind and partially sighted people really is a game changer. You can go around. I was running around my house taking photos of pictures on the wall, and it was describing them. And it really is. It's amazing. I think that has to be, for me, the best thing of 2023.
As a blind person, I can also relate to that, Jackie. And of course, it brings to life some of those old photos as well. You can, dig back into your sort of library, or even dig out the family photo album and get AI to give you the descriptions that perhaps no family member could.
Could do it in the same way, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Robin Spinks, your low vision, what's been your technology moment of 2023?
Well, everyone's already covered the AI kind of phenomenon, which I wholeheartedly agree with, and I'm continue to be amazed with it on a daily basis as I use it more and more in my work and for leisure. But for me also, Dave, you mentioned I'm low vision, that's right. And also, I, talked to lots of people with low vision who told me that they'd like to have a really good magnifier on Pixel devices. And lo and behold, we were able to get a conversation going with Google, get the engineers on board, get the investment commissioned, and create it. And they launched it in October this year, Pixel Magnifier. So anyone who's low vision or who just finds things hard to see can download it free of charge from the Google Play Store to a Pixel 5 device or newer. And it's just the start of the story. It's a new landing, if you like. We're not claiming to have the perfect app. We've got a great experience, hopefully, and one that we can continue to build on. But yeah, that was a moment for me, certainly as someone who hops between iOS and Android constantly, Pixel in one pocket, iPhone in the other. And I'm just keen to see accessibility growing across both those platforms. That for me is the one of the things that sticks out. But also, just thinking about the sheer range of applications that are now utilizing AI and what we're using them for. So, being in meetings where Copilot is actually being run and it's capturing the actions and then sending them to everyone afterwards. Who would have thought it? Absolutely phenomenal, and there's so much more to come. So, yeah, pumped, as the young people say.
Yeah, you're slaying it. That's what the cool kids say. Callum Stoneman, you're one of the cool kids. Anything different?
Don't know about that. No, with the risk of repeating what everybody else has said, it's got to be the Be My AI feature for me as well. That's been the biggest highlight. I mean, something that I was using it for some kind of fun stuff, just taking a picture of things that are in my house and taking a picture out of the window and getting it to describe the view, for example. But then when you mentioned earlier, Dave, about going through some old photos, and I remember flicking through, because I've got loads of photos on my phone that I know I want to keep, for the memories, but I don't necessarily know what they are. And I started just kind of going through, picking out some photos, scanning them in, getting a description. And there were some photos from family holidays. There was a part where I actually did get a bit emotional, if I'm going to be honest, and that doesn't happen easily for me, was a couple of photos that I scanned were my wedding photos from me and my wife. And it was the best description of her wedding dress that I've ever had. Even in some respects, better than the descriptions that I got from her and from some of the sighted people around. So, I mean, it just blew me away. And I'll tell you one thing that it's taught me as well. As someone who's been totally blind from birth. When you take photos with Be My AI, that little camera on your phone picks up way more than I thought it did. The amount of things that it picks up on and says, oh, and in the background there's this. And I'm like, what? How's it got that? It's the other side of the room.
Let's turn our attention slightly away from AI and think about augmentative and virtual reality. Now, Jackie, you and I are both blind. I find this really difficult to get my head around, but Ant Morse has written about this subject quite extensively in his book, The Future of Us. Do you get it, Jackie? Or, I mean, Ant is the man to ask. So if you've got a question, now's your chance. Are you going to be rushing out to get an Apple Vision Pro?
On the price base that we've heard so far, no. I think it would be really interesting to have a play with one, but it isn't top of my wish list, to be honest. Obviously, there are lots of people who love gaming and they love VR headsets and augmented reality and all this. At the moment, I'm not sure that I quite understand it. I'm not saying I don't want to try it out. I do, but I need to study it a bit more, if you like.
And have we still got a bit of a way to go with some of the AR and VR experiences, especially thinking about this in an accessibility context?
We have, yes. And I think if we think about, and we've split them into two parts, I think if we look at VR, that has been around for many, many years. I think the first concepts were in the 70s. Technology evolutions and improvements will need to be made to make that more realistic. And again, if we look at the kind of the use case of children, you know, they're the early adopters of this technology and set the trend of what we do in business often. And they are still not convinced. They're still not in that, in this metaverse that has been predicted to be so big. And as a fan of technology, I'm also, you know, I play devil's advocate and challenge technology. And I think that it's an unreal environment in virtual reality, and it will be niche for some time to come. So train courses, health and safety, health therapy, very, very good use cases. But nobody wants that headset on for longer than an hour. You know, it's heavy, you start to sweat in it. It's just not going to work. We've seen improvements in hardware. So there's some smaller tech now coming to market, which is a step forward. But I still think that VR will remain niche. Augmented reality, on the other hand, I think is where the opportunity is, and for two reasons. One is having the physical space and then this digital overlay, I think is more manageable and more realistic in terms of its use cases. But secondly, and most importantly, if we follow the money of technology, then we'll decide whether it succeeds or it fails. Because if we can't see the money, we either are the money, in Google's case, with the advert generation, you know, to promote your slot, or we pay for the service. And I think with augmented reality, overlaying information in a augmented world, we can sell. So at the moment, if you were to search coffee shop near me on Google, your screen would be filled with 10, 15, you know, depending on how long you want to scroll, you know, lots and lots of paid searches or promoted searches. In an augmented reality version, you'd get one reply. I think as well, augmented to move to what I class as spatial compute, which is to then have audio introduced to it. Because the thought of walking down the street and saying, where's the local coffee shop, and having an arrow appear on my glasses, as an example, a bit overkill, really. I'm not sure we need that. Whereas actually, and from an accessibility perspective, would cover a far broader catchment, would be to have the audio description. So I rarely take my AirPods out of my ears, they're in all the time, and it reads my emails to me, it, you know, plays music, whatever. So to say, you know, tap on my AirPod and say, you know, where's the local coffee shop, to have that one response to say, there's one 200 yards on the left, it's great coffee. And, you know, we could go more into the AI and data sharing opportunity as well about that information. And I think is a more realistic use case. So I think augmented reality will be monetized, but it's going to take time. Vision Pro, wonderful bit of kit, I'm sure. Huge price tag, as Jackie mentions. I'm not sure there'll be many rushing out to buy that anytime soon. And I don't think we get it for some time yet anyway. I still see that as, in my opinion, it's more of a concept that they'll prove. Will it look like that in a year's time, 2 years' time? Probably not. Will other people come to market with similar things? Yes, because they're following the money. You know, where's that single search result You know, and who's going to pay for it to be present. So I expect them to follow, but I'm not sure we'll all rush out to it. And I think audio is missing. That's really the key thing for us. We need audio compute rather than vision compute, which I think would be more practical use.
Robin Spinks at RNIB, we're working a lot with the built environment and we're thinking about mobility and how blind and partially sighted people move in public and private spaces. And I know our inclusive design team have been working hard on this area. There have been a number of live trials of different technologies throughout the year. But, you know, thinking about AI and you know, the sort of virtual reality and augmented reality, some of that stuff that Ant was describing there. This technology needs to be wearable, doesn't it? And it needs to not feel like technology, because ultimately the best technology doesn't feel like technology. It just it feels it kind of a bit more everyday.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it should melt into the background. It should become irrelevant what the platform is. And I agree with Anne. I think, you know, VR is going to be something that will be niche for a long time, because ultimately what you want to have is that, you know, and it works for me too. I want to have that little bud in my ear and I want to just touch it when I want to know something. And I want the information in audio. You know, I have to spend a lot of time focusing on where I'm going, because I have low vision. I'm trying to use that to the best of my ability. So anything that was overlaying over my glasses, for example, I just think I would struggle with that. I'd probably fall down a hole, do you know? So I actually want it in audio. And I also want to have control over the verbosity of it as well. So I want to tell it when I want lots of information. So I'm in a shopping street and I want a decent amount of information about the shops on the street or in a shopping mall. But actually, when I'm on the way to an appointment and I just want to know what time something closes or opens, you know, I just want that quick information. And actually, I've been using Pixel Buds for quite a while now and having quite a lot of success with those. What I tend to do is wear one of them so that I've got one ear completely uncovered just to take in the ambient noise, and then the other ear receiving short, helpful prompts. So yeah, I absolutely would go down that route of audio first. And maybe the future is that, you know, you can choose. You can have audio first or visual first if you're perhaps a person with a hearing impairment and you want that information delivered in a different way. It should be multimodal. So I think huge potential for AR, but let's think about how we optimize audio as a channel, because we can do so much with it.
Indeed. And Callum Stoneman, you're somebody who plays a lot with navigation technology. Of course, we were really worried at the start of 2023 about the demise of Microsoft Soundscape, the free app that gave us directional information. And there have been a slew, I tell you, of replacements, which is super exciting. But also we've heard about, you know, robotic guide dogs and suitcases for guiding blind people. How far is too far, do you think?
I'm not sure. I can definitely see the benefits of robotic guide dogs or some sort of robotic, you know, maybe even a robotic cane. And what I mean by that is that it's getting the directions, and rather than telling you where to go, it's, you know, it's guiding you, as opposed to just saying turn left or turn right. It's actually doing it for you and showing you where you need to go. I think that good. But then also, I don't know how much control I'd want to hand over to the technology. As a, you know, I used to be a guide dog owner, and although the dog is taking you where you need to go, you're the one that's in control. You know, you're the one telling the dog where you need to go and giving the commands and the gestures to the dog. And I kind of feel like I could see huge benefits to a, I mean, I'm not suggesting that a robot is just going to, you know, drag you down the street and good luck. But I don't know how much I would want the technology to do. You know, I quite like making the decisions for myself and making sure for myself that I'm safe as I'm walking along. So I think it's interesting. You know, it's an interesting development, especially for those people who, for whatever reason, can't have, you know, proper guide dog. That I can definitely see the benefits there, but in terms of how smart I would want this thing to be, yeah, not really sure about that.
2023, of course, was a tumultuous year for social media. Twitter took on a new direction with the stewardship of Elon Musk, now rebranded to X, of course. Instagram launched Threads, a text alternative. We heard about accessibility improvements to TikTok. And, of course, the rise of Mastodon, the decentralized social network that claims not to prioritize corporate interests. Callum Stoneman, you've been looking at some of this for us. What's the current state of play and what's around the corner?
Well, I think it's actually quite surprising, because I was expecting really big things from Threads, because I actually quite like Mastodon, but I always knew, and I think I said this at the time when we've discussed it on the show, that it wasn't really going to catch on. You know, it's just, although they've tried to make it simple for signing up to your server and picking an instance and signing up, and then you've got to seek out all the content yourself, and they've tried to make that as easy as possible, but it's still just, it's not going to catch on. You know, I honestly think it's not going to catch on beyond the kind of more technical audience. And that really seems to be the case. You know, there's a lot of great people on there and great conversations happening. It's just not going to be the next Twitter in terms of mainstream adoption. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it just feels a bit niche. And, you know, that's why I kind of really loved the idea of Threads, because it ties into Instagram. And I think that's a big part of it, is that you can transfer, if you like, all your Instagram followers. So everyone who you follow on Instagram, you can automatically, with one click, just follow them on Threads. And I think that is a huge benefit, because people don't have to, I think people don't want to start all over again, you know, which you kind of have to do with Mastodon. You've got to look for people and work out which server they're on, which instance they're on, and, you know, find them yourself, which is part of that decentralization. But it just adds that bit of complexity to it. But unfortunately, Threads doesn't seem to have taken off either. You know, it had that initial jump when it first started and everyone jumped on it. And it just seems to have slowly gone down in terms of active users and engagement. I think people, the mainstream, the sighted audience, if I can kind of stereotype a little bit, I think they're not interested in a text-based platform. I think TikTok and Instagram Reels and these little short videos and funny, you know, GIFs and things are what people are interested in. So I think that's the direction that social media is going to carry on in, I think.
I've literally had people say to me, I just cannot be bothered to read. I just want videos. Ant, do you have a view on this?
Yeah, and I'm with Callum on this. I think it's absolutely right. We want to be entertained. We you know, people don't read books quite like they used to do. And I think this instancy of entertain me now is there. Our attention span is incredibly short. And I'd love to say this is a generational thing and that young people don't want to sit down and watch a movie. They want to watch a box set. But I think we've all adopted it. You know, we want short, snappy information that entertains us. And I think, you know, the video is clearly, you know, winning over text. While I have the mic, you know, the other bit I'd say is, I think with Twitter looking at premiums, we're not going to pay for this. Let's just be absolutely clear. You know, some yes. may, but there'll be a commercial advantage to them doing it. And then when the audience that won't pay move, and they will just move, you know, we'll go from one to the other to the other, and then that platform will die. So it's for me, social feels very fashionable. You know, it's what's in fashion the time, what's the latest way to entertain, and how do you maintain it? And, you know, I'll be critical of TikTok, wonderful platform, you know, clearly captured lots and lots of people's interest, but now it's turning into a shop. So yeah, that will soon lose its ground as well, and a new system will appear in its place. So I think TikTok has a shelf life. I'm sure it's a long one, but if it continues to try to monetize it quite as desperately as it is doing, then viewers will drop out. I was on there the other day, I think something like 10 ads in 10 minutes, and it was like, wow, you know, a year ago you would see one, if that, in the same time. So they're clearly turning it up, but they could kill it by doing so as well.
Well, I tell you what, Ant, you might not think people read books like they used to, but I know Jackie Brown reads a lot of books. Jackie Brown, what's your thought on the current state of social media? Do you use it?
No, in a word. I did have a Twitter account when you were able to use Twitterific for iOS, and but when Twitter took the direction that it did, I just didn't bother with it anymore, and I'm not a Facebook user either. I don't use TikTok or Instagram or any of those things. I have no interest in it, to be perfectly honest. I just don't have the time to do that on top of all the other things that I want to do that are more important to me. And I just, it can just go wherever it wants to go, but it can leave me behind.
Yeah.
And Jackie, I'm with you on that. I think I class social media as a time thief. You know, it just steals so much time. And, you know, people are sitting on TikTok scrolling through content endlessly. And, you know, we're talking about AI aiding our lives and doing things better, but for what? To sit on social, you know, it doesn't feel.
Yeah, but AI is kind of, you know, AI for a blind person or somebody that has, you know, very poor sight, it really can aid you, you know, that we've talked about
no doubt.
It but yeah. But social media, I don't know, what do you really, it's time in your life you're never going to get back. It's just so time consuming. People sitting with their phones all the time, they don't even look where they're going, where, you know, they're walking along using their phone and just bumping into somebody. It's just, I don't know, it's just not for me anyway anymore. I've deleted my Twitter account. I got off Facebook years ago. I wasn't on it long anyway. And good luck if people are out there and they enjoy it and they, you know, it brings some kind of dimension to their life, but not for me.
Callum Stoneman, are you listening to this? Surely social media is a vital means of communication. It can break down isolation. You can find your tribe. I certainly use Facebook groups a lot, you know, to find out about what's going on in my local area, what live music events are on, and what my running club are getting up to, and all sorts of stuff. You use social media. Do you want to respond to some of those concerns that Jackie and Ant have raised?
Well, to be honest, I kind of agree with a lot of what they said. The only difference being that, I think you're right. I think Facebook groups are incredible, especially the fact that you can have closed groups on there now and you can post anonymously as well to certain groups if the admins have enabled that. And yeah, that does go a very long way, you know, to being able to, for example, there's a lot of visually impaired specific Facebook groups on there where you can talk to other visually impaired people and you can ask questions. And as I said, you don't have to reveal your identity on those posts if you don't want to. So there is that. I think Mastodon, maybe that's where Mastodon has its place as well, because that is a bit easier to find a community. There used to be a really good community. Well, there still is a good community of, you know, blind and partially sighted people on Twitter, or X as it's now known. But what I've found is that because you've got all this promotional content shoved in your face and the premium subscribers get kind of put on your timeline first, and you've got all your verified accounts, which, I mean, verified doesn't mean anything nowadays. It used to mean it was an official account and they'd verified who they were, and it was something, you know, for example, if you saw Amazon verified, you could tell that that actually was the real Twitter account for Amazon. Nowadays, it just means that they've paid their £8 a month or whatever it is. Could be anyone. I think it is getting harder to find. It's getting harder to keep track of that and actually see the content that you want, especially with now there's no third-party apps allowed.
Well, there we are. Billions of people use it, love it or loathe it. Social media, it's not going away anytime soon. And if you are on TikTok, RNIB will be joining you this January. You can follow RNIB_UK on TikTok. And of course, you can find RNIB on your other social media platforms as well. Another active area of interest for us at RNIB, Jackie Brown, is that of tactile technology. And of course, we've talked a lot about multi-line braille displays. Are they ready for prime time, do you think?
I think they are. I'm really, really excited about the onset of these multi-line displays. I mean, we've had the Knute 360 around now for a couple of years. But it's now becoming, you know, you've got HumanWear and you've got Orbit Research as well with their various and DotPad and things like that. So they are coming along. I think for the individual, for the home user who would love to have multi-line braille, I think the price is going to be an issue for a lot of people. But for education and employment and, you know, people who are able to tap into, you know, DSA or access to work, I think it's amazing. And when we can actually pair one of those things with an iPad or with your PC so that you've got multi-line braille using Windows, I mean, I just can't wait for that. Bring it on, because, well, as you know, I'm a big braille fan, I love braille still. And I just think this is taking it to the next level with, you know, multi-line having so much more at your disposal. I just worry about the price, that some people are going to be priced out of that market, because it is very niche. And it is going to be targeted more at education and employment. But I just hope that there is going to be something there for your average Joe Bloggs in the street who is blind and, you know, doesn't either work or just wants it for leisure. I think that is the one concern I do have.
Thinking more broadly than braille, just tactile experiences generally, and how much are developers of augmented and virtual reality experiences thinking about the tactile experience? You know, we focus a lot on the visual. You described an arrow there pointing in the direction of travel, and maybe we need to think more about audio, but what about tactile?
Yeah, I think there's a huge opportunity here. I really do. And I think one of the use cases which I'd love to explore with that, whether it's augmented reality, virtual reality, or just spatial compute itself, would be to have, in theory, every device, whether it's either a camera looking out at an environment, and then having kind of like haptic devices on wrists or on parts of clothing, I think to make people more aware of the surrounding. And I think those types of technologies are already quite well established in virtual reality, as an example, where you can start to interact and feel the environment around you. But I think there's, again, to that point around virtual reality, it hasn't got the investment that we'd like it to have. And also it's niche, they're always following the gaming prize versus, you know, what is the spatial compute element to this? So I think there needs to be a bit of a transition of where that investment is. But I think there's a phenomenal opportunity to do more of I think you mentioned earlier, obstacle avoidance type solutions, but in a, you know, the tactile and haptic feedback experience personally. But I don't see a huge amount of it. I know there are pockets of this, but I don't think there's anywhere near enough really as yet.
Mainstream entertainment could well be a huge driver of that technology. And Robin Spinks, I know one of the active work areas for RNIB's inclusive design team is immersive media and accessible gaming. We've heard about Talking Flight Monitor, which is a tool that enables blind pilots to take to the virtual skies, no less. Of course, Forza Motorsport version 8 was released with a ton of accessibility features. How important is that work, and what's next?
It's massively important, Dave. You know, blind and partially sighted people, we want to enjoy gaming as much as the next person, and so we should, because it's so much fun. We're really keen to continue to work with the gaming industry globally, so working with game studios and also with the major platforms to make sure that there's a greater understanding of accessibility at the design level. So let's build things that from the ground up can be enjoyed and can be, you know, people can just immerse themselves in it in the same way that anyone else would. So there's the development side with studios in terms of developing games, but there's also research. We need to understand in much more granularity the experiences that people are having with gaming right across the board, from, you know, mobile games to PC games and consoles. And we want to understand that in a lot more depth and ensure that we can communicate that understanding to the studios, to the platforms, the developers, so that ultimately what you get is games coming from the ground up accessible. That's the plan. You know, I'd love to look to a future where in a decade from now, the expectation that people have got about gaming is perhaps similar to the expectation that we've all got about mobile platforms. So if you bought a new phone and you unboxed it, you would absolutely expect it to have a screen reader or screen magnifier. It wouldn't be a delight to discover that. It would be your expectation that it would have it. And I want us to get to the same point with gaming. It'll take a while, but we're making good progress and we're really looking forward to the collaboration going forward.
I appreciate you're all super busy people. So let us come round then and just get a final thought. What are you looking forward to in 2024? Or what are you concerned about in 2024? What's your sort of big expectation in the year that lies ahead of us? Are we going to be dominated by more drama around social media and all of that? Or is it going to be something really left field, do you think, that's going to catch us unawares? I remember this time last year, we thought that the metaverse was going to be the hot topic this year, and it's turned out to be AI. So let's come to each of you. I'm going to start with you, Callum Stoneman.
Well, I think for me, going back to the AI for a second, I guess a concern that I do have is when it comes to AI in the context of accessibility, because we know that it's doing some amazing things within accessibility, for example, giving us better captioning of images, you know, giving us better alt text. But then, and we've also got AI writing code nowadays. People are using AI to design and develop apps and services and websites. But then I just worry that because AI is giving such a boost to accessibility, does that in a way let developers off the hook? You know, are we going to get a website with loads of images which have no alt text or very useless captions, or, you know, or are we going to get very inaccessible documents? And is it going to be kind of left to us, or of, you know, well, you know, the just run it through this AI thing, this AI will sort it? Or, you know, rather than developers learning about accessibility, will they become too reliant on AI to just tell them that something's accessible, which, as we know, is not always accurate? So I think it's a bit of a
hallucination is the word they use, isn't it?
Yeah, hallucinations, exactly, yeah. So I think
where it goes off on one.
It just goes into its own little world. So yeah, I think it's one of those where it's a bit of a double-edged sword. You know, it could be amazing. I think it's going to do amazing things, but it also could, I don't know about set us back, but it could make the accessibility argument a bit tougher for us, I think, if we're not careful.
Robin, let's get a final word from you.
I'm looking forward to more accessible public kiosks, like kiosks in supermarkets. So many people will know that if you go into a Tesco and you're low vision and you touch the bottom right-hand corner of the self-service checkout, there's a button called larger text. It makes everything larger when you tap it, makes the UI easier to use. I'm looking forward to more of that across the piece, but also talking public kiosks. We're at a really interesting point in terms of customer service. We're seeing some supermarket chains moving back from self-service kiosks. Booths recently announced that. I'm really keen to see more accessibility there, and I can't wait to see what happens next.
Jackie?
I agree with Callum to a large extent, because I think it's great, all the AI that we're getting at the moment, especially some of the AI that's being put into blindness, if you like, specific apps like Be My AI. And obviously Seeing AI has now recently come to Android. So, you know, all these kind of apps are just, I think they can only get better. But I think we do have to hold on to making sure that when we get information and we're looking for it, you need to have a handle on how to fact check it, because it can, you know, some of it can be a little bit, there is a lot of stuff out there, and you know, it is important to, you know, to keep a handle on, you know, what is fact and what is really, you know, where did that come from or whatever. So I bring it on. I think it's a magnificent achievement where we are. I mean, I say this to many people at the moment, it's a great time to be blind, because it really is. There's just so much going on out there. But I do think we have to err on the side of caution as well, to some extent.
And you wrote the book. What's next?
Well, I think we're going to continue to see a huge focus on AI. The race will hotten up. Google DeepMind recently launched their Gemini product, which is in effect moving us from text and a number of different applications to do video and audio into one multimodal opportunity. So I think that hots up the game. Competition's healthy in any industry, and it will certainly be in this. The next thing that I think will appear will be true digital assistants. So Robin mentioned Copilot earlier. That's a Microsoft product that, you know, is putting AI into your working day. We predicted that would happen, but it's doing it at a general level. I think what we'll soon start to see is digital assistants. And again, I go back to that follow the money. If something does 25% of my day job, would I pay for it? You bet. Which then brings me on to that, to the next piece, or the concern, which I agree with Jackie and Callum, is that we're going to see people's anxiety grow in terms of what AI is going to do and what it, you know, how far it might take into the jobs market. And I look at this in a slightly different way. I think that it will start to do more of our jobs. And yes, robots will replace automation. They always have done through careful automation. That hasn't changed since the mills of the 1800s and the production lines of the 50s, 60s and 70s and to date. But what AI is soon going to start to do is take away lots of clerical parts to our job. But actually, I think that as a society, we should just evolve with that. Stay relevant because of all the things, the hallucination, the bias, the errors, the data, govern and police the AI models. But if they can do 20%, 40%, 50% of my day job, would I pay for it? You bet. So I think a race to monetize it will happen through this competition. And, you know, they'll be looking for the Outlook. You know, the Microsoft Outlook is the default, the go-to. And so they're going to be looking for prime position. But we as a society are then going to have to manage and almost coach ourselves through the embracement of it. You know, the Luddites fought against automation in the mills. You know, we're going to see that again. There's going to be the Luddites of AI. So, you know, coaching our people through it, the work that Robin does to help people with accessibility by design, we're going to need to do exactly the same with AI. You know, coach people to navigate it, to work with it. I'm a strong believer in cobotics rather than complete automation. And yes, it will take jobs, but I don't think it'll take quite as many as we think it will. So yeah, exciting time. It's going to be interesting.
And at the risk of putting you on the spot, Ant, employment is a huge challenge for the sort of blind and low vision community. 3/4 of working age blind and partially sighted people are out of work, you know, and many of the job opportunities that are available to us might be done by AI in the future. What jobs do you think somebody with a disability could do going forward?
I think spatial compute will open up the playing field, really. I don't think that there'll be many jobs that are ruled out. In theory, if you think about neurodiversity or some with dyslexia, you know, writing a CV was a challenging. Now with AI, you know, that can be helped along. And again, through these digital assistants, we are the controller of lots of different tasks. So I think it's going to open up the future of work to accessibility by default. Spatial computing will aid accessibility. You know, again, they'll be following the money. I'm not sure they'll all be doing it for the right reasons, but, you know, they are not charities, they're commercial businesses. They need to make money. So I think they will naturally get us to a point where technology then opens up work to a far wider audience across the piece, and again, to be that Copilot, a great product, great name, but that's what we'll be co-pilots of AI, so we'll be guiding it. And also as well, we will see this battle of are we in the office, are we out of the office continue. But quite frankly, again, if we look at society and we look at young people, you know, they're not rushing back into the office. So, you know, we can argue and look at both sides to being together and having that interaction and serendipitous knowledge exchange. And for all of that, however, you know, what will society do? We will work smarter, not harder. It's part of our nature, and that will continue. So again, that will also open up work to a far wider audience on an accessibility level as well. So I think it's going to be a really exciting and interesting year ahead.
Ant Morse, Jackie Brown, Robin Spinks, and Callum Stoneman, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.